Hello and welcome to MOAS. Resettlement can be a daunting prospect. There's the language, the culture, the customs, a different lifestyle. Will I be accepted? Will we integrate? These are concerns facing refugees set to make their lives somewhere new. Resettlement is a key program run by UNHCR, and it involves identifying vulnerable refugees from a country they've found asylum in to another offering them a safer and more permanent future. According to figures going back to 2003, UNHCR has resettled up to 207,000 Rohingya from the Bangladesh refugee camps so far. Since the recent crisis, there have been calls to resettle even more. In this episode, we're going to talk to people about what resettlement looks like, hearing from resettled Rohingya communities, and those calling for more resettlement. Rudy Oviak is the director of the Office for Refugees of the Archdiocese of Toronto. ORAT is one of nearly 120 private sponsorship agreement holders, a mix of private citizen, community, and faith-based organizations sponsoring refugee individuals and families through everything from seeking school places to finding accommodation. Private sponsorship has been responsible for the resettlement of 200,000 of Canada's 500,000 resettled refugees over the last four decades. Ever since the Canadian envoy to Myanmar, Bob Rae, published his findings on the Rohingya crisis, ORAT and others have been waiting for the government to make a move on further Rohingya resettlement to Canada.
Certainly in my experience directing this office, the work that our parishes do and that other faith organizations do is absolutely fantastic. And it has been proven statistically that we have much stronger integration outcomes than, say, refugees that come under the government-sponsored refugee program. And the key difference, and let me first of all point out the difference in integration outcomes. And this was based on an analysis of Syrian refugees that were brought into Canada, which found that refugees under the government-sponsored program, 90% of them went on to social assistance in year two. That means 10% were self-sufficient by the end of their sponsorship period, which is typically 1 year. The same measure for private sponsorship indicated that 55% of private sponsored refugees were self-sufficient in year one. That's a five-fold improvement over the same integration outcomes that the government has. And there are two principal reasons for this, but I think the most significant reason for this difference in integration outcomes is that when a refugee arrives to Canada with faith-based organizations, they are welcomed into a community. So we have, when we're working with our parishes, anywhere between 5 and 20, 25 volunteers working with this newcomer family to integrate them into Canada. And so they build the relationships, they orient them to their new life in Canada, they provide them with all sorts of assistance as they're able to with finding accommodations, ensuring that they receive their access to the government programs that they're entitled to. They help register their kids in school. I mean, it's a beautiful, fantastic program that faith organizations are able to bring to bear just because of the goodwill of regular parishioners that want to help address the plight of refugees. And I compare that against those that come in under the government-sponsored program. And here you have one settlement agency worker that is typically has in their portfolio anywhere from 15 to 25 families that they're supporting at any given time. So you can see in the difference in support levels why that would lead to stronger integration outcomes. Now, the other difference that I think has been cited is that what has been reported, and I haven't seen the stats to this, is that the government-sponsored refugees typically are more vulnerable, so they have lower education. But it would be interesting to find an apples-to-apples comparison and then compare the integration outcomes. But I think the principal driver is the number of people that are helping an individual newcomer family orient them to a new life in Canada. I think that's the principal driver.
What kinds of activities do resettled people go into once they reach Canada?
Well, after they're greeted at the airport by their sponsoring family or sponsoring parish group, they're then settled in a temporary accommodation for a period of 1 to 2 weeks. And during that time, there's a whole series of activities that they undertake with their sponsor, with that parish group. And that includes accessing healthcare, looking for permanent accommodations. So the newcomer family is typically involved in that process of securing their more permanent accommodations. They're oriented to some of the cultural elements associated with Canadian life. And during that first 2 weeks, it's a lot about relationship building between the sponsoring group and that individual newcomer family. Now, in the case where there's a family-linked case, and so this has a little bit different than our parish-linked cases. Family member living in Canada wants to sponsor their family from overseas, and so they can do that through the Office for Refugees. They'll automatically, in those cases, the relationships are already well established, and so there's no relationship building. But for parish groups and community organizations who are the primary sponsor or the co-sponsor, there's a lot of relationship building that needs to take place. And then I think one of the most important steps in their integration process is language. There are settlement agencies that are government-run organizations that will do a language assessment and then help them to register, if required, into language training. So that's one of the key tasks. Also, as part of their integration, it's important that they, if they require employment counseling, that they have access to that. When they're ready to, is to look for employment. And usually our co-sponsors, whether it be parishes or the families of the newcomers, they have done a remarkable job in having them access English language training and securing employment. And then it's, you know, going about the building a new life in Canada and all that that entails.
Canada has so far accepted 303 Rohingya refugees resettled from Bangladesh. Given the Trudeau government established a target to resettle 25,000 Syrian refugees back in 2016, do you see more Rohingya coming given the circumstances?
You know, I don't know what is in the mind of government officials, whether that be our Prime Minister or the Minister of Immigration. So I can't speak in terms of the plans and the steps that they will take to address the Rohingya refugee crisis. So I don't know if there's going to be a special program undertaken similar to that of the Syrian refugees. And my only concern, if a new initiative like that were to be undertaken for the Rohingyas, is my concern about the refugees that have been in the process, have been waiting to be received by Canada, the impact that that will have on them, who are suffering equally. And so this is, it's a very difficult circumstance for the Rohingyas, but equally difficult for the many refugees that are suffering throughout the world. And so I think it's difficult to prioritize one group over another without creating additional challenges. That being said, I mean, we need to do all that we can. I think Canada has shown a tremendous willingness to address the plight of refugees, whether they be Rohingyas or Syrians or Iraqis or Pakistani Christians that have fled to Thailand. There are, at this point, I think 25 million refugees throughout the world. And so the tremendous need to address plight of refugees is so great. We can do only what we can do. The limited part that we can play in addressing the plight of refugees, we can't assist all 25 million. Certainly Canada cannot do that on its own, but we can play and have demonstrated that we can play a very significant role.
Despite the millions seeking resettlement through UNHCR, only a lucky few succeed. This year so far, UNHCR has filed humanitarian visa applications for nearly 33,000 potential candidates among 46 participating countries. Those Rohingya who managed to be resettled under UNHCR find themselves in communities ranging from less than 100 up to a few thousand. Haikal Mansour is Rohingya, but he wasn't resettled. Instead, he came to Ireland to pursue his studies in medicine. He forms part of the small community of 78 Rohingya living in Carlow and Dublin in the Republic of Ireland, many of whom were resettled there in 2009. It's a mostly young community, one well known for its cricket.
The majority of them, almost entirely the Rohingya community, who have lived in the refugee camp for 17 years before being resettled in Ireland. And these are the Rohingya refugees and Rohingya people who were forced to flee the Burma their birthplace in 1991 and 92 during a so-called Operation Clean Nation, which was conducted by the former military junta and forcing more than 250,000 Rohingya becoming homeless and becoming refugees in Bangladesh. And the Rohingya Community Island is a very small community, and it is almost entirely made up of youth, especially I would say about 80% of the community here is the youth less than under 20. And we have also a lot of widows whose husbands were either killed during Operation Clean Nation in 1991, and also whose husbands were detained in Bangladesh during repatriation process in 1993. And we have also kind of around 10% of the communities are the elderly, and majority of these elderly are the women.
What kinds of challenges or difficulties did this community face coming to Ireland?
It is not easy for any community or any individual, you know, to coming to a different place, which is entirely new, a new world for the community, because they have literally spent entire life, 17 years in refugee camp. The youngsters, majority of them were born in refugee camp, which are completely like an open prison, although it is outside Burma. Inside Bangladesh, they were literally haven't seen any freedom of movement beyond the camp. And also they have not seen any delivery of good health care rather than basic health care. And also this community have not seen an education beyond class 5, whoever finished class 5 until 2001. They have no right to go to high school or to seek university education. And these people have also isolated for so many years. And coming to Ireland is a very huge challenge. Not only it is around 9,000 kilometers from home, but also because the language is completely different, the weather is completely different, the culture is completely different. And everything is different. So they have the community has faced several challenges, especially in the language barrier, breaking language barrier, especially also weather, coping with the weather, also different community, different society here. So in the beginning, and we are extremely lucky to, the community is extremely lucky to have so many wonderful people in Ireland, especially volunteers, as students and teachers, colleges and, you know, schools, and also even law enforcement agency, who has all contributed collectively to make this community feel at home as well as cope with a new home as soon as possible. This community have been implanted with hope, and they were very much aware of that hope, and also bringing the hope to fulfill the goals they have in life, like, for example, educating the youngster, that their kids, and also standing out for the community that left behind in refugee camp as well as in Burma. So now we are very fortunate, you know, where a lot of people are now coping and calling this country, Ireland, a home.
Can you tell me how the younger generation is coping with their lives in Ireland compared with the older ones?
The younger generations are very enthusiastic and also eager to learn than the older generation of Rohingya community in Ireland. When they were first resettled, because they had nothing, in refugee camp. So when they were given so many opportunities, example, you know, education, housing, and freedom of movement and healthy environment in Ireland, they were like, they have seen the other kids from different community in Ireland. They have become interested in learning and becoming part of that society. So when they were admitted in different schools, and they quickly started learning things, as well as definitely with the help of so many teachers who gave lessons and also teachings in their new languages. Now we are so proud of that, you know, and now we have a Rohingya refugee youth who was only 12 years old when he was resettled in Ireland around 10 years ago. He became a professionally trained pilot in Dublin. We have another Rohingya youth who is now studying at the most prestigious university in Ireland, at Trinity College. He's studying healthcare. And we have a lot of youngsters who are now pursuing, you know, their goals and their dream to become whatever they want. But this would not be possible if 10 years ago, if they were still in refugee camp. This is the positiveness of resettlement of Rohingya refugee, not Rohingya refugee, any refugees from any part of the world.
What is the importance of cricket to your community? And how has it helped connect you better with the Carlo community?
A Rohingya community in Ireland is particularly well known in Ireland for the Carlo Cricket Club. Carlo Cricket Club was one of the oldest clubs in Ireland, and it was completely defunct until 1980s, closed down. When Rohingya community were resettled in Carlo, and there the youngsters especially who grown up in Bangladesh, where the cricket is the main sport, even though, you know, cricket is rarely played in Burma because this generation grown up in refugee camp where they played cricket. So they want to play cricket as well as, in Carlo. And then with the help of so many people, they started playing in an open ground. And then slowly and slowly, and the community realized there was once a cricket club in Carlo. And they started reopening the cricket club in 2011 or 2012. Then on the first year, the Carlo Cricket Club brought two major championship trophies for the first time in 40 years of the club history. And we are so proud of the club as well as the community and many other people who contributed. Now this Carlo Cricket Club has not just Rohingya community, but various nationalities, Irish community, Rohingya community, Pakistani community, Indian community, Bangladeshi community, and also various other community. Carlo become a symbol of the Rohingya community in Ireland for the successful integration in the society.
Australia maintains a firm stand on refugee and humanitarian visa numbers, despite calls from Australian and Rohingya voices alike to increase resettlement quotas. One of those voices is the Burmese Rohingya Community Association in Sydney. Formed in 1999, it provides a range of services to new arrivals, supporting a community of almost 7,000 and advocating for more resettlement. Acting President Ahsan ul Haq was in Canberra last month campaigning for more Rohingya places.
For a very long time, and even today for that matter, we've been pushing for the resettlement to restart, especially since it's ceased in Bangladesh. I think that would be around 2010, and initially around 300 families that have actually resettled in Brisbane. It is actually because of a push from BRC itself, so we kept advocating, and there's something called a community proposal pilot sort of a thing over here, you call it CSP. It's just one of those legislation where the community members can actually request or rather push for a quota for their demographic to be resettled in Australia, which would be obviously through UNHCR. So we've been doing that. Unfortunately, in around 2010 or so, the resettlement has ceased, mostly because of Bangladeshi government. From what I've heard, they've stopped it for some reason, and there's been a lot of technical issues with UNHCR as well. Having that said, since 2012, the massacre that happened, and also the 2017 one, the major one yet, we've been pushing really hard for UNHCR. And even though it's not on paper or official, UNHCR has assured us they've actually been pushing for Rohingya refugees from all around the world, especially from the UNHCR camps, to be resettled in Australia and other countries as well, like they've done with the Syrian refugees in Australia about 2 years ago when they resettled about 12,000 Syrian refugees given the crisis. So something similar is in the play to happen for Rohingyas as well. But so far, we haven't really heard anything, so we're still waiting, and we continue pushing. Even last month, when I went to Canberra, there was a UNHCR NGO consultation. I brought it up there as well, and I've had a pretty similar sort of positive response, where they said they're pushing for it, but nothing official yet.
For the time being, resettlement of Rohingya from the Bangladesh camps has come second to returning them home. Eyes and agendas are squarely focused on the repatriation of the newest arrivals, with many wanting to go back. But, with widespread criticism of the opaque return plans and Myanmar's lukewarm responses to welcoming them back, could resettling more Rohingya be the answer? If you liked this podcast, don't forget to hit like, comment, and subscribe for more podcasts from us. You can also follow us on our social media. Check out our latest updates on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Audioboom. Or you can donate to help us help Rohingya refugees. From all of us here at Moas, goodbye.